Okay, this is the 11-30-2011 9/11 Truth Teleconference, and we're about to begin here with our, let's see, Anna, you want to call the roll then of the people that you already have on the call?
We have Ken Freeland, Anna Yisley, Dwayne Deet, Robin Horden, James Hufford, Jeffrey Orling, Shelton Langford, and Craig McKay. McKee.
Okay, is there anybody else on the call that has not been added to the roll? Okay, Annie Eisley is serving as secretary, and Ken Freeland serving as facilitator. Approval of draft minutes from 10/28 is circulated by Anna. Anybody need to amend those minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are taken for approved. Formation of the agenda. Other than the update on the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign, which we usually do, and the open discussion, which we usually do, there are no items that were circulated, but I do have two that need to be added. Sheila, if she shows up, has a motion to stop taking minutes on the call. So if she shows up, we'll have to include that as well. And Don Mazzarlian, who some of you may remember that are long on the call, have been on the call for quite a while, who was voted off the call, actually, due to, well, let's just call it disagreeable behavior, would like to rejoin the call. So that needs to be discussed as well, if there are no objections. Would anybody like to add or subtract anything from the agenda?
Robin, addition.
Robin, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to add to tonight's, if not further agendas, some form of an update between the relationship between the Occupy Slant 99% movement and the 9/11 Truth Seeking community.
Update between the Occupy and the 99% and the 911 Truth movement, right?
Yes, and not and have that not just the general discussion. Anyways, at least.
Okay, so a special item, Occupy and 911 Truth. Any objections to adding that item to the agenda or any of the other two items that were mentioned?
No.
Okay, hearing no objections, then we'll proceed with those agenda items. Let's see, Sheila's not here, so we'll go on to Mazzarlian question very quickly here. I don't know how many of you remember Don Mazzarlian. I know Jeff Orling was here then. I don't know if anybody else was.
Don Mazzarlian, yes.
Yeah. So Don Mazzarlian was an early member of the call. He had a tendency to be kind of forceful and difficult sometimes
to... He was like a one-trick pony.
I'm sorry?
He was like a one-trick pony.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he kept bringing up the same thing kind of over and over. And so a number of people agreed that he should be disinvited from the call because it was just becoming very difficult. But he would like to be re-included in the call. He did send me something tonight to share with people, which I did. I sent it to the 911 CC... telecon listserv for people to look at. It's a couple items on the from the what's it called, Anna? The the newspaper that you edit. What's it called? The Sovereign. I'm sorry. Yeah, and so that was shared with others, but he would like to actually be on the call. Be able to participate in the future. So since there's no, we don't have any policies governing how long people would be off the call once they're voted off or when they'd be allowed back on, it's just open for consideration. He would like to be back on, so pro or con, anybody wants to talk about it, feel free.
This is Dwayne.
Jeffrey.
Then we'll vote. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think hardly anybody that's on the call presently knew Don Mazzarlian. I think he was a very passionate 9/11 advocate who was an activist and who was doing misprision of treason. So I would like to hear updates of what he's doing, and I think he should be allowed back on the call. I think he has some interesting things to make.
Would anybody like to speak against bringing John back on the call?
This is Dwayne. I had a question first.
Yeah, Dwayne, go ahead.
Did he offer to change his behavior in any way when he requested to be back on?
No, he didn't say anything to that effect. He just said that he had things he wanted to share with people, and so he'd like to be back on. But that doesn't mean he couldn't be asked if he were willing to be more observant of our protocols as a condition, if somebody would like to suggest that option.
I guess what I'm curious as to how did he react when he was asked to leave, and coupling with how he acted when he left, is it logical that he would say he would change his behavior when he came back?
Ben, I can't answer that whole question, but I will say this, that when I talked to him today about that, he was maintaining that he had quit, okay?
Jeffrey.
And I think it was kind of a combination of the two things. I think he was upset with the situation and not getting the response that he wanted, and he was going to leave anyway, and people were getting upset with the way that he was behaving on the call, and they wanted him off the call. So it was kind of a joint decision. So there weren't any real hard feelings either way. But now he would use the advantage of being back on the call. So I would suggest that maybe somebody might want to, you know, if we're open to the idea of giving him a second chance on the call, asking him if he'll be very careful about watching his time and his tone on the call.
Ken, Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, go ahead.
Robin Horton.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, what was happening is Don Mosseralian was involved in some sort of activism, and he was sort of demanding, you know, or requesting very strongly that the people on the call follow his lead and do what he wanted to do or initiate some sort of programs like that he was doing or something like that. And he was not getting the support, and he sort of was stomping his feet a little bit. And so I don't know that he was thrown off, but he was sort of laying down the gauntlet, and then he just sort of left because he wasn't getting the support. That was my interpretation. But I would be interested to hear what he's doing. I certainly didn't, you know, think that his demand was reasonable.
Okay, well, if I may, I'll agree with the first part of what you said about, you know, the description of his behavior. I think that's pretty accurate, and he was extremely demanding of people, and he would actually give them the third degree if they didn't agree to do what he wanted them to do on the conference call. But it is true also, though, as opposed to the reason why he's not here, that Jonathan Mark did ask people over the internet if they agreed that he should be removed from the call, and there was a majority support for him to take him off the call. So that's why he was taken off the call. It was a group decision.
Okay.
So,
Robin, you're the point.
Yeah, Robin.
Whoever proposed that he be reinvited and then asked if he feels that he could, you know, kind of be part of the community in a more equal way. I don't even know the guy, but I second that motion. However, whoever said that just a little while ago.
Well, like, nobody's putting it. Would you like to put the motion, Robin?
Make a motion that he be reaccepted into the teleconference as a function of his willingness to become a cooperative part of the community.
Okay. Would anybody like to second that motion?
Second it.
I do.
Okay. Would anybody like to speak against the motion? Does anybody object to bringing Don back to the call under the circumstances of this proposal? Hearing no objections, then we'll take it as consensus that he can be reinvited under the condition that he agrees to be a mindful participant in the conference call. Okay? I'll communicate to him at some near time in the near future before the next conference call. Okay, thank you. And then, okay, we move on to Robin's issue. I'm sorry, Sheila, are you on the call yet?
I am. I just joined.
Okay. Well, then we should probably take up your item, which is was re-included in the agenda. I had forgotten to put it on there. I know that you had requested, you wanted to make a motion to do away with minutes for the conference call. Is that correct?
Yes, and I guess I'll say a couple words about that.
No, wait. Hold it before you do. Would anybody like to second the motion?
The motion is
what? I'm sorry, who would like to second it?
No, the motion, could you repeat what the motion is, please?
The motion is to stop taking minutes for the conference call.
If we have recording, I will second it.
Okay, is that Jeffrey?
Yes.
Okay, so it's moved and seconded. Sheila, you can motivate your proposal. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I want to say that I was in the emergency room today, and I'm on two pretty heavy-duty pain pills, so I'm going to hold on as best I can here tonight, but I might
what
be
happened,
a little
slower. You want to just what happened?
Oh, I had food poisoning, and I fainted in my bathroom and hit my back, and now right now I'm walking with a walker.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I don't have any broken bones, but I don't know what I hit, because I just, you know, I was feeling extremely nauseous, and the next thing I knew, I woke up on my back, you know, with my head essentially kind of like under the toilet. So.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm...
Well, take it easy, Sheila.
Okay, thank you. I just want to let you know, I won't be quite as... quite as on the money as I normally am.
Do you want to take up the issue when you're feeling better?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to take up the issue when you're feeling stronger or better?
No, I'm okay lying here. I feel okay. I just say I might be a little slow.
Okay.
My reason for suggesting this is that it seems like we spend an inordinate amount of time, you know, talking about the minutes after the call, and with a lot of different viewpoints about how things should be phrased.
Presented.
And I guess I'm just wondering if there's really a purpose to it. It seems like I mean, I realize that Anna does not really want to be doing this anymore, and I'm saying this, I think, partly on her for her that I don't feel that I want to put her through the ringer in trying to make the minutes as accurate as I feel they should be, because I know, and she doesn't really want to be doing it in the first place, but I know, I'm sure it's a lot of work. And it also seems that there's somewhat of a tendency for certain people on the call to engage in perhaps excessive aggrandizement, self-aggrandizement, with the view that certain views are going to be, you know, put down in writing about them. So I'm thinking that if we have a recording which can be consulted, that having the minutes, I'm not sure, is as much trouble as it's worth. That's what I think about it.
Okay. Thanks,
Sheila. I can respond.
Wait. Excuse me just a second. First of all, I need to point out to folks, as I already have to Sheila when she mentioned that she wanted to make this motion, that this is a calling for a special rule, which means a rule that will in some way limit normal democratic functions of a group. So therefore, it requires a two-thirds majority to pass if we go that far. But before we go any farther, I would like to ask if anybody on the call feels neutral enough about this question that he or she could take my my place as facilitator for this issue because I feel a need to participate in the debate on this question. Would anybody volunteer to take my place as facilitator for this issue?
This is Dwayne. May I first ask whether or not we can go to a more simplified set of minutes where we only state the motion and then whether it passed or not?
Well, yes, you may do that first because that's what I was going to do, but I won't have to do it if you do it first. So.
Well, that's my recommendation. So,
yeah.
That's
asking for probably a friendly substitute motion. I think asking Sheila if she would accept that as a substitute. That instead of having detailed minutes, that we simply have a record of what motions are made and passed.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good idea.
Okay.
Okay.
Now
that makes sense.
Let me say though that the one exception to this would be scheduled reports. Like if somebody was to report back to us or report on something as part of a normal report that we schedule, that report has to be summarized and has, you know, so that those who are not on the call would be aware of it. Okay, so that's possibly the only hang up in this approach because that's the only part where it's not just simple, and it is a question of summarizing what's being said. But hopefully if we eliminate individual comments from the minutes, there will be a lot less controversy about the way in which they're written. Is that
I had the impression that individual comments were not necessarily included anyway unless the person specifically asked that their comments go into the record.
Right. That's right. If, in other words, the group agrees that an individual's comment should go into the record, then it goes into the record. But otherwise, it shouldn't go into the record.
Can I just pose some questions as to what is the purpose of the minutes? The purpose of the minutes that I'll just, you know, from what I gather, it is a way of communicating with all the 9/11 leaders in the community. So for everyone in the 9/11, movement, it's an important enough call just because of the people it goes to. But now, how are the minutes being used? Today, I was able to find the minutes. I searched for my name and anyway, the minutes are coming up in searches. Whatever purpose that serves. To me, the minutes served, and this is just my perspective, was that I was trying to make it, just an account of the phone call, and I guess leaving it devoid of any personality or any kind of opinion, I guess that would be the goal. But that, I may not be the best person to do that. If the call, I'm just throwing out some thoughts. These are just my thoughts regarding the issue. If the call is recorded, too, I'm not sure. You know, I like the idea of having the important points pointed out, and if someone has something to share, that it's recorded in written form. I think that's important for whoever needs to view it or wants to see it. But I think the recording would serve. Now that it's once a month, it's much easier. I mean, it's fine. If I can do it within a week and not have to do it within 3 days, you know, that's fine too. So as far as my willingness to do it, I'm willing to do it once a month. If it's not important, I'm just as happy not to do them. So if any of that is helpful, those are my thoughts on the matter.
Thank you, Anna. A point of order here. Shouldn't we have asked if there was a second to that and then open for the discussion because I have been holding back.
And here's why, because that was proposed as a friendly substitute and it was accepted by the person who made the original motion, which had been seconded already. So because that's true, it now becomes the seconded motion that we're dealing with rather than the original motion. Okay?
Please put me on a queue for a comment.
Sure. Go ahead. You're next. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I am going ahead here. I think that given even accepting a certain amount of subjectivity of the minutes taker, which can be corrected, that taking minutes is not only important, but it's extremely important because if we presume that people in the movement only, you know, will get the information we're talking about as a function of them listening to the entire thing, okay, then I think that we're not being sensitive or wise in the circumstance. I think, you know, I think that Anna's doing a fine job and not being too verbose about any particular situation, and that I would probably oppose Duane at just simplifying it to a motion or did it pass or whatever it might be. I think that we need to keep open as many ways of transferring information as we can. I am strongly opposed to such elimination.
You're strongly opposed to that limitation on the minutes, okay? Got it. Who else would like to speak?
This is Duane again.
Duane, go ahead.
Okay, I see the purpose of the minutes is to have an official record, and one of the major reasons is so that in future months, if there's a issue about whether something was voted on officially and things like that, you can go back in the minutes and see exactly what was voted on and whether it passed and what it actually said. I think that's by far more important than a means of communicating with the larger 9/11 community. I think that effort is maybe a separate activity. I don't know what the best way of doing that is beyond having the recording available, but maybe that's another thing that people consider of how we communicate points that that have certain purposes and things like that. So I guess I don't see that. I see that as a different thing than the official minutes of a business meeting. Over.
Okay.
Can I get on the stack? This is Sheila.
Yeah, go ahead, Sheila. You're next.
I think someone else asked to be on the stack.
I asked to be on the stack, Ken. This is Anna.
Oh, thank you. I didn't hear you, Anna. Thank you, Sheila. Go ahead, Anna. Then Sheila.
who was just speaking just before? This
is Duane.
Duane.
Sheila, go ahead and go. I just need to recollect what my point is. I just kind of lost it for a second. Go ahead, Sheila, and I'll speak after you if that's okay.
Well, I'll just say that I think the thing that motivated me to make the suggestion was I recall after the last conference call that there was a section where there was a description of Barbara's presentation in Toronto that seemed to me to be excessively glowing, especially given that there was no attribution there. And I felt like we can't just have the secretary, I mean, obviously she's got her own subjective points of view, but we can't just have certain people kind of singled out to get kind of the royal treatment while others are sort of ignored. It did help that we then got inserted that this was a report from Barbara Honegger, and so this is what Barbara was really saying about herself, which I thought added what we needed. However, the situation does remain that other people also gave reports, and oftentimes I find that it does seem to be a lot of imbalance in terms of how people, a real lack of objectivity in how people are described in the minutes vis-a-vis their reports. And it does seem like, I just feel like I'm, writing in a lot saying this is really needs to be changed or this really needs to be changed, and that just the amount of effort that it takes to kind of turn it into an objective document to me often feels kind of excessive.
Okay, Anna, you're next, and then I'm after you. Go ahead.
I wonder if it's just a difference of opinion between you and I, Sheila, and I reflect my opinion, which may be different than yours, and maybe that's the problem. That I mean, I appreciate your comments and observations. One is obviously I shouldn't have an opinion in the minutes, but I don't find any journalism without some kind of opinion, or at least interesting journalism. So maybe this isn't journalism. But the thing is, the fact that it's, you know, searched on the Google and people can find these minutes, it should be a little bit of journalism somewhere. So I guess taking responsibility for whatever journalistic slant there might be, you know, I need to, you know, look into that. The other thing I was thinking about, as far as the purpose of the minutes, now this isn't like we're an organization that are doing things as an organization. Basically, we're a group of people on this telephone call. So the telephone call itself is really our only objective and goal and mutual interest. So I'm not sure if the business minutes really qualify because we're not really an organization outside the telephone call. And we're taking minutes of the telephone call, so I don't know. To me, there's a little bit of a difference. It would be different if we were, you know, meeting regularly and we had, you know, pursuits, and then you have this monthly telephone call to explain everybody where, you know, where we are and what we're doing, where our goals are, and all that kind of thing. And I guess it kind of runs like that. But to me, it's just a group around the teleconference call, and so the minutes to me are more a reflection of what the call was about, something to, you know, provide some interest so that people would even be interested in reading them. So that was all I wanted to say.
Okay, Anna. Well, you go ahead, Robin, then I'll follow you. Go ahead.
Okay. I really support what Anna's got to say, and the additional point, if I didn't emphasize it enough earlier, is that we are now after the 10th, and the presumed momentum is that the 9/11 truth-seeking community would shut down. And this is disturbingly in parallel with that. And what we need to do is to professionally and respectfully not shut down, but in fact just kind of present our ongoing whatever it is. And I really feel that Anna is doing a fine job. And I base that because I was misquoted a couple of times or didn't express myself enough. And I had an opportunity to correct it, and it was corrected. It couldn't be more healthy and more important than what I think. So I think it's a great service that Anna is doing, and the process is invaluable.
Thank you very much.
Ken, this is Craig. Could I get on there before it finishes?
Yeah, go ahead, Craig. I'll follow you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to say, I guess, that my understanding of minutes is that it's supposed to record what was done during the meeting, or in this case the call, rather than sort of individual opinions. I don't really particularly agree with the description of it as journalism. I think that the problem with the Barbara thing was that it really was very subjective, and it did sit, even after the changes were made, I still thought it wasn't attributed. It sounded like, you know, we were just saying that it was a fact that her thing was well received, which may or may not be true, but it's not really relevant to the minutes. To me, it should be, but I think it also should be more than just recording votes. I think if we have a big discussion on a subject, it should be recorded in the minutes that we had that discussion. I think that's important. So, you know, a report that's given, or if we have an agenda item where we're going to discuss a specific point, I think we should record that we've had that discussion, but we shouldn't try to get into subjective opinions about what, you know, what we did or what we said. So that's it for
me. Okay. Thank you. This is Ken. I'd like to just say it's very hard for me to stay neutral on this because I do so appreciate the work that Anna has done, and I too think she's done an outstanding job. I think it's helpful, though, to look back at the particular point of conflict here. The item in question was a statement by Barbara, who, along with Paul, was mentioned specifically in the agenda as being asked to give a report on their experience at the Toronto hearing. So I think it was incumbent on the Secretary to note that report. Now, it might have been better had it been clear that, say, Barbara reported that blah, 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 rather than such and such was the case, as if what Barbara was saying was accurate. But I think that's a technicality, personally. But I think the idea of making sure that things are properly attributed is a good guideline, and I think it would have been helpful here because that's how a report is given. It's reported. It's not a statement of fact. So I'm trying to keep my personal feelings out of this, but I'm glad to hear that Sheila would like to continue doing the minutes because I do feel like she's done a very good job. Okay. Maybe take a vote on it. Craig, go ahead, and then I think we should vote on this because it could take. And by the way, at this point, it would not take a two-thirds vote because the friendly substitution is not asking us to do away with the minutes. It's only asking us to limit them, and that's different from doing away with them. So that would not be a special rule. That would just be a guideline. So go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, I just wanted to
back after Craig, please.
I just wanted to comment on what you said there. I don't think Barbara's opinion about her own presentation is relevant for the minutes. I mean, she obviously feels she did great, which is fine, but I don't really think I don't think that's something that needs to be recorded. I think the fact that she's reporting, and a summary of what she said in terms of the information is fine, but just for her. For us to include that it was because Paul also made the point, that his presentation was also well received, but that didn't make it into the minutes. So I would suggest any kind of editorializing, even if it's part of the person's report, sort of praising themselves, should be left out.
Okay,
Paul,
Sheila, you want to make a last comment there?
This is Anna too. If I could just make a short one.
Okay, then Sheila, then Anna.
Yeah, well, I was. It would be helpful if somebody had that paragraph in front of them, that how it originally was stated, what was said about Barbara, because I don't believe there was any attribution at all.
No, there wasn't. Sorry.
And it did seem that Real Objectivity would have treated each person making the report with equal, giving them an equal share. So it's, and this is one of the things that I was kind of trying to avoid by getting rid of the minutes, the temptation for certain people to do some excessive patting themselves on the back to, I guess with the idea that it's then going to be recorded in the minutes as a fact. And I would prefer that our teleconference be, just bit more sort of down to business and not with people using it to kind of present a certain image of themselves to the world. So I was thinking this partly from Paul Zaremka's perspective. If I had been him, I think I would have felt, a little snubbed or slighted that, we're listening to a lot of glowing things about Barbara and he was being given short shrift.
Okay, Anna?
Just wanted to, thank everybody for their observations. I will try to be more objective. I am seeing, I can't blame Barbara for that, that she put herself in there. That was really my rendition of what I heard, and I was very excited about her presentation, and that came through. So I would like to be, I'll try to be more objective, but we did pass the minutes around. I think the third draft was the one that seized to get comments, and we did pass it around. I did make changes, and when it eventually got to a point where both Paul was thanked me for the changes, and he was happy with his with the report, and Barbara too was happy with her report, and I felt we had settled Sheila's, she had raised some points, and I had made some adjustments. So I think that I did make some adjustments. If I could make some more further, I think after the conversation, I probably could have made some, more objective, I could have taken a lot more things out, and I didn't. So, it's all live and learn, and I'm happy to continue to endeavor to do what needs to be done, and, once a month is fine, and if I can reduce it, that'd be fine, too. Reduce the time spent on it would be great, too.
Thank you, Sheila. Okay, I think we're...
At Dan.
Okay, Robin. Robin, go ahead.
I originated the request for the teleconference to actually get a report
from both Barbara and Paul, and obviously it was subjective, and that was it. And they're entitled to their subjective reports. We have to deal with that the way it is. What I hear here, what I'm hearing here, is that there are a certain number of people who don't agree with whatever Paul said or Barbara said or whatever it might be. And that's your opinion. So what? Big deal.
Oh,
okay.
Can I make a quick comment, Craig?
Craig, go ahead.
Yeah, I personally, that's not what I was saying. I think even as I look back on, I think the final version of it, it's titled Honegger Report, but then it says Barbara Honegger's presentation. It starts from there as if it's a third person, and it ends up with a must-see for every supporter, but it's not attributed to Barbara. So I think that was the issue. It's not so much that people didn't agree with her. I think I actually do agree with her. I thought it was a great presentation, but it should be clear
okay.
that she's the one saying it, that's all.
All right, so the question before us now is should we limit future minutes to simply actions of the group and brief summaries of scheduled reports? That's the motion. Would anybody, I'm sorry. So I guess we're ready to take a voice vote on it. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, hear the ayes again, please.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, I believe the motion carries, so in the future, the minutes will have less text. They'll be more curtailed. Okay, is that understood, Anna?
I want to make sure that Anna is clear on what we've asked because it's for her.
Okay.
There's a lot of criticism that I can't anticipate. I mean, I'm not a professional journalist for one thing, or a professional minute taker, or you know, whatever. So if we can't resolve it through passing it back and forth through the listserv,
Anna. What I'm saying is, just as long as you understand what this motion is that was just passed here, okay? The minutes should be simpler in the future. That's all.
Ken, you redefined it. You redefined what Dwayne said. I
beg your pardon. Dwayne, would you like to clarify? Would you like to clarify your motion? Maybe I didn't understand it well enough.
Well, I think the only clarifying that you did is you added the statement that there would be a brief summary of reports.
Scheduled reports, yes.
That were submitted, and. I didn't see that was a change in what I had in mind, although I didn't actually say that. So that's a little bit different than actually including the full report. It would be a kind of a summary.
Yeah. Well, I'm just making sure that whatever is on our agenda is reflected in the minutes, okay? If the agenda calls for making a decision, that decision is there. If the agenda calls for getting a report from somebody, that the gist of that report is there. That's what I think we owe the members that aren't present, okay? That's why I want to make sure that we're protecting. That's why I formulated it the way I did. But if you disagree with that formulation, it's your motion, so you can object and we can take another vote on it.
Well, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
I might ask Anna what she wrote down the motion.
Well, I was going to wait until it was transcribed to tell you the truth. I have brief summary, pre-summary. I thought we said brief summary to report all admin reports. Brief summary and motions. Somehow that's what my notes would say. So.
And the outcome of the voting.
Right.
What if we have an agenda item that's a discussion? What do we do with that?
The agenda item is a limitation of minutes. Okay, that's what it's now called. Limiting the formula of the minutes.
But if we have a discussion as part of our agenda, how do we reflect that in the minutes is what I'm...
Oh, that would just be that that discussion was held on such and such a topic. As long as
okay.
there's no action that comes out of it, there's nothing to list. Just
as long as it's mentioned.
The discussion. Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's great.
Okay.
I would rather not be legislated, only because it's you know difficult to do them anyway, and I don't want to be under too much. You know, is this going to pass the? You know, I mean, we're passing it
right.
amongst each other. Read it, make your suggestions. I'll try harder to listen to the suggestions and make them. If we could do it that way, I'm you know I'm all for whatever. But I don't want to be too legislative or too much. You know, like I just want to do them and get them out. You know what I mean? I don't want to think about it too much. So if we pass it back and forth, why can't we make those adjustments? Now, it sounds like I didn't adjust it enough. I didn't understand the concerns. I thought that I really, you know, still kind of believe that,
Sheila said
that she just kind of disagreed with Barbara Honegger's report, but I can't be responsible for saying, oh, well, some people might have disagreed with Honegger's report, so, you know. So I'm a little,
well,
still a little like.
I think that the protocol is still that after you draft the minutes, you send it to the listserv for feedback. That's what we've always done with the minutes. And, it's just that now there'll be more curtailed minutes. They'll be shorter and contain less, individual comment and so forth. But still, if anybody has an objection, they can let you know there, and then you can make the final call. You're the secretary, and then you submit the final call according to what you've heard from people, and then they can be amended right here when we get back to the call if people still have a problem with them, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's move on then to the item that Robin put on, updating, he says an update on the Occupy movement and its relation to the 9/11 truth movement. Robin, do you want to start that?
I'm just kind of seeking feedback, experiences, thoughts, whatever it might be regarding the combination Occupy SLINT 99 movement versus the 9/11 truth-seeking community. I mean, I have had experiences with almost a half a dozen different places right now that I can share, but I'm really looking for if anybody else has gotten any of it.
Robin, I'll suggest that we all have the same thing. We've all had our own experiences, and I think it would be beneficial if you would share your experiences, and then we could take turns sharing our own experiences, and that might be how we find out what's going on.
Well, let me give you a background. Number one, I've been to Occupy Seattle a couple of times. I'm involved in my own hometown in county, which is Occupy Kingston, and then the Kitsap County 99 percenters, which is in northwestern Washington State. As it turns out, I had this odd travel schedule for a variety of reasons where I was able to connect with Occupy Albuquerque, Occupy Santa Fe, and then now I'm in Boston and I've had a chance to occupy with Boston. And so it's really been, number one, very interesting, but my observation is absolutely clear, and of course I have a huge attitude about this, and that is that the Occupy movement has finally joined us, and they're accepting of us more. That's my point. And I can't tell you how more clear I can tell you is that we have woken them up. Our message, even though it isn't talking about the specifics about 9/11, is just they've just kind of caught on board to our overall general concerns about us, the state of our democracy. So maybe I'm being too flamboyant here, but that's the way I feel.
To the state of our democracy, but how about to the 9/11 issue itself?
A 9/11 issue itself has been received probably 10 times more comfortably than in any other time in the last 5 years. Because I go to all of the things, and certainly in Seattle, and New York's always been open. I go to all of the different peace marches, veterans for peace, all the entire thing. And without any question, and this is all across the board, wherever I went, I was not ostracized or in any way cast out as a function of what information I was bringing, which is in pretty big contrast to certainly the peace community in the last 5 years. Peace community has been hostile. for explainable reasons. Unacceptable reasons, but they're explainable. And I don't find that anymore.
Okay, thank you. Who else would like to share experiences or comments about this relationship?
I'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
Oh, this is Anna Yaisley, I'm sorry.
Anna, go ahead.
About the OWS, I'm sorry, hang on a sec.
Anna, while you're waiting, I'll go ahead and start then. I'd like to let you all know that I went to Occupy Houston and spent considerable time trying to get them to endorse the need for a new 9/11 investigation. Myself and our other activists here locally, a few of us went down there, we were unsuccessful in doing that. We felt that there was a fair amount of support for it there, but because of the decision-making process, it only takes a few people to stop any proposal, and they did not have a good way of dealing with people who object, in other words, to get into long dialogues about what the nature of the objection was and so forth and so on. So anybody could pretty much just end any kind of proposal like that, and that made it very difficult to go into longer things. We tried to set up a working group on the subject, but nobody showed up for it. So I went down there and spent some time trying to help them with their process, but at the end of the day, they really weren't interested in improving it much. That's my history of it. Here, it's kind of frustrating, but I did feel like there was general support for the idea. And I also like to mention that, for those who don't know it, there was a poll taken for Occupy Wall Street by, I can't remember the name of the group, but they were taking a poll for all the different issues. And we investigate 9/11, like toward the end of the poll, all of a sudden shot up way past all the other issues. For getting the total number of votes, it got 72,000 votes total, both pro and con, compared to like the second most popular issue, which only got 10,000 pro and con, which is very strange. But it was about an 80% in favor of a reinvestigation of 9/11. But I don't see that reflected in Occupy Wall Street's actual agenda. But that was that poll that was taken online. So, just for what it's worth. Okay, who else would like to speak?
This is Anna. I was going to say it's kind of hard to say within the 9/11 activist movement that 9/11 isn't the only issue, but 9/11 is not the only issue. There's other issues around, and they are equally as important. And so the fact that we're not focusing on 9/11, I think, is a healthy thing because there's a lot of things going on. There's the chemtrails, and there's the water supply, the fresh water supply diminishing. There is Agenda 21, where they're going into the counties already. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on all at the same time. 9/11 is one. You know, if we could investigate 9/11, of course, can of worms would open, and we'd be able to address a lot of these other issues. But it really isn't the only issue. And if you only focus on 9/11, you're going to miss out on a lot of the important conversation going on right now and a lot of the changes that are happening. And, free energy or, perpetual motion energy, that's for the scientists and architects and engineers involved in 9/11, they should be looking into this, this technology that's been stifled and stepped upon. So that's my two cents.
Okay.
If I may speak, this is James, and I agree that as individuals, of course, we need to look at all of these other issues and place some emphasis on them. But as 9/11 truth activists, we need to emphasize, and as a group of 9/11 truth activists, we need to emphasize 9/11 truth issues and not the other issues. Let groups that are formed around those issues emphasize them. We'll emphasize 9/11 truth as an organization and as individuals, so we can take part with some of those other organizations and efforts as well.
I agree with that. I also wanted to add that 9/11 is also what is instigating a lot of the worldwide, nationwide protests underlying, I think maybe even a little unconscious or subconscious for those who are still afraid to speak about 9/11. And there's so many government workers, especially here in Virginia, where I live. There's so many government workers that are, I mean, they are in denial about 9/11 because they'd lose their jobs. They'd lose this. Maybe they're not in denial. Maybe they're just out and out lying. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the 9/11 issue is out there. It is helping generate the momentum that we're seeing all over the place. But some people are not really conscious of what, how I personally believe 9/11 is what got Ron Paul where he is too. There was a uniting force in his campaign and the folk that supported him that were also 9/11, that were also truthers, so to speak. And yet there's a, you know, this subconscious fear of talking about 9/11 because the Republican Party. So anyway, so there's a lot of things to it. I think hitting people over the head with 9/11 isn't really important right now. Truth, you know, focusing on truth and all the other issues that relate. Anyway, that's my thing on. I don't think we want to look so hard, but talk about 9/11 definitely. That is what is really causing a lot of things. But if you don't hear 9/11, doesn't mean that truth and the power of it isn't, you know, isn't generating the momentum. It isn't a big part of it. I think it's a huge part of it all over the world.
Okay. Thank you. Who else would like to speak? James, do you want to finish?
What's that?
James, did you have more to say?
Yes, I do. I tell my group that I founded here in Iowa that on the issue of 9/11, we are the media. We are it. We are it. And if we don't keep that in the public consciousness, keep 9/11 truth in the public consciousness, no one else will. And besides that, we all report that of talking to people who never heard of such an issue and never knew that it was even controversial before, I think we still have our work cut out for us as informers of the American public or world public, and that we need to keep at it and keep an emphasis ourselves as a group, as an organization on 9/11, because nobody else is going to do it.
Okay. Anybody else want to join the conversation here on this question? Relationship between 9/11 and the Occupy movement?
This is Dwayne.
Dwayne, go ahead.
This is in way of a question. I don't know how the March on Building 7 turned out. I know that leading up to that weekend, the overall Occupy Wall Street were not enthusiastic about the walk on the march towards Building 7. Does anyone know whether that turned out okay or big or a flop or what?
Yeah, this is Ken Freelock. I can answer that. Robin, can you answer that?
The only thing I could say to you is I had two experiences. One at a guy from Occupy Boston. Well, he wasn't from Boston, but he was. And I met him in Occupy Boston. And the other is Manny Badil, who was kind of at the ground floor of Occupy Building 7. The guy in Boston, who, in my view, gave me an extremely negative report in that he was treated hostily, I thought was strange. Turned out he was, I forget his name, he's on YouTube or whatever it might be. But in any event, it was so disturbing to me, I Facebooked Manny, and I said, "Man, how'd it go?" And Manny said basically the same thing that I'm saying to you, which is that overall, the messaging was accepted much more easily, and as I think in a rephrasing of what Anna is saying, is that it's part of the tapestry. It's one of the threads in the tapestry of a lot of what is going on right now. Manny was extremely enthusiastic, and I'm you know, sorry, but I felt that this guy that bumped into me up in Boston was up there to foment dissent and kind of give disinformation in that situation. So that's you know, you have to deal with that the way you have to, you know, deal with it the way you want. Those are my two reports on that.
Well, I just can't, I'll add to that, that the report that I got from the ground there was that they had a march to the Building 7 on both Saturday and Sunday. That would have been the 19th and the 20th, I think it was. And both days they got a total of not more than 50 people to participate. That's my understanding.
What's your interpretation of that, Ken?
Well, given the amount of advanced publicity and the value that was made about it in advance and the big names that went into promoting it, it doesn't seem to be a very big turnout. I would say that the movement as a whole in New York there is not taking it up as a major item. That would be my inference.
Okay. Anybody else?
I would also say this, that among the people that organized at Occupy Building 7, I think Ted Walters was probably one of the major organizers. And our organization, the organization that I am the general manager of, the Citizens 9/11 Commission Campaign, asked about the possibility of endorsing or co-sponsoring that event, and we were given a flat no. We couldn't because they didn't agree with us. So it was not a very open-ended kind of organization.
And where was this, Ken?
I'm sorry?
Where was this? What? Where was this?
Well, I officially communicated the request on behalf of Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign whether we could endorse or co-sponsor the event, and we were told no.
The event in New York City?
Yes, sir. The Occupy Building 7 event.
Right, because there. But that's a different question because Citizens Commission is completely different. It's a completely different animal than just the 9/11 Truth community in general. You may not think so, but it certainly is.
Well, it's part of the 9/11 Truth community. I hope you would recognize that.
Oh, I agree. No, I okay. Completely agree.
Okay.
I have it, but
well, yeah, I was just saying. Here's one. Okay, today 9/11 Truth, for example, was a co-sponsor of that event. Was a sponsor of that event. So, you know, seeing that, we thought, well, would you like us to lend support to it as well? Would you like us, you know, and actually we did publicize it. We already publicized it, but I said, would you like our endorsement or co-sponsorship? They said they would not. So
okay.
That was just...
But that's the architecture's point of view.
I'm sorry?
Jeffrey.
Did you say A&E? That's the point of view. They don't endorse the 9/11 Citizens Initiative thing, and that's their right. That's fine.
You don't understand. We were asking them to endorse us. We were asking if we could endorse the Occupy Building 7 event. Okay?
Right.
We wanted
to
lend our support to their event to, you know, say we agree with this event, we want people to go to it, we want to publicize it, and so forth. And they did not want our endorsement. Okay?
Right.
Okay.
Jeffrey.
And who else would like to speak? Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe that probably why it might not have been as successful is that the success would have been if the people who wanted to do the Building 7 effort managed to bring support from the general Occupy Wall Street people, pull them over there for that effort. And the reason probably, I don't know, I wasn't down there at the time, the reason probably was that the General Assembly would need to consider each individual protest or effort or whatever they're going to do, demonstration, and sort of vote on it somehow to support it. And I don't know that any effort was made by the Building 7 program to bring this to the General Assembly and get the support of the OWS in Lower Manhattan. What they were essentially doing is saying, well, while everybody is jumping on here and bringing up their issues under the umbrella of OWS, we're going to do something as well. And so it just essentially became a simultaneous event with OWS, not an OWS event. That's my interpretation.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Anybody else want to speak to the question before we move on? Okay. Thank you for that. And I guess it's now 8:07. Maybe we could take a few minutes if anybody has any announcements or any items they would like to discuss about the 9/11 Truth Movement and our issues. Feel free. It's an open discussion.
I'd like to say I hope everyone's seen that Senator Gravel's RT interview.
Oh, I'm sorry, Anna. I'm sorry. We usually do take time for a report from the Citizens
That's
9/11
true.
Commission campaign. I would be glad to give a brief report if people would like. Otherwise, we can skip that if you prefer that.
If there's any news, yeah, why don't you go ahead and share, Ken?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll just give you a brief update. Senator Gravel came back from his trip to Europe in the interim here. Did not find much support for the 9/11 Truth Movement there now as much as there had been in the past. In fact, found very little interest in it. More of the interest in Europe, as here in the United States, is on the Occupy movement. So it kind of is pulling everybody in that direction, and there's not a lot of attention being paid right now to the other question. Given that, we were also anticipating that he would be able to find funding support over there. He was not. We've had to revise our strategic plan, which called for going into Colorado and possibly North Dakota in the 2012 election cycle. We've had to revise that to say we probably are not going to be able to meet those financial goals. So we've pulled that item from our strategic plan right now, and we're back in open discussion about how to proceed from here. We're not real sure what we're going to be able to do given our limited funding, but that's our situation. Also, while he was gone, in fact, right before he came back, we got a major hit piece published against us by 9/11 blogger Eric Larson. They published a piece from him called Flaws in the Citizens 9/11 Commission Campaign. And this is it's important because positive pieces on our campaign have never been allowed to be published by 9/11 blogger. And this negative piece, while they don't say it answers all of their concerns about our campaign, they said that they shared some of Mr. Larson's concerns. He's apparently one of their staffers anyway. So they allowed his piece to be published. Fortunately, the comments in response seem to have been, arguing with his basic critique. Some of his points were valid, but it was largely an extremely negative piece. There was nothing positive about the campaign in it. So we're waiting to see if they'll allow us to publish an equal and opposite response, but so far they're not giving us any encouragement. That's pretty much it.
That's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it is. It's not
surprising.
Good news. I wish I had good news to bring you, but I don't really have any good news to bring you right now. It's kind of all kind of dismal.
Well, I think this is Robin on the stack here.
Okay, Robin. I'm sorry, but somebody else is already speaking.
Dwayne, I was just putting my name on the stack.
Okay, so Robin and then Dwayne.
My point of view is that I think there's a bias here that I do not share, that the Gravel Citizens thing was going to be rather amazing or a huge turnaround or that important in comparison to what the general thrust of the 9/11 Truth community was about. So the tepid responses that you've gotten are just reflecting sort of a, in my view, somewhat of a healthy skepticism, saying, yeah, well, okay, well, this is not the end of it. This is part of it. This, you know, do that too. But so I'm not surprised. I'm not disappointed. And if I had to comment about the citizens thing, I can comment negatively about that for a while, but I don't need to. Not the point. The point is that that's not the only iron in the fire. shouldn't be looked at.
Okay.
I'd like to speak, Anna, whenever. Put me on the stack, if you would.
Okay, Dwayne and then Anna.
Okay, this is on a more positive note. It's not on the 9/11 Commission. It's on the 9/11 movie that Howard Cohen has been trying to get going.
Yeah.
I hope you're all familiar with this, but he's really moving quickly now. He's got the director is the Michael, I can't remember his last name. He's the French director that provided the $50,000 to
Kasovitz.
The that's it.
Yeah, his name is Matthew.
Yeah, Matthew Kasovitz.
Did I say Michael? Matthew.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's Matthew. Yeah.
Anyway, he's become very engaged and is working on kind of some new slants on it that are all very good. They've got a hope to actually get it in the next Cannes Film Festival and do the filming in probably February and have a big kind of an internet and international grand opening on the web on the next 9/11 anniversary. So whether it all makes out, he's got all his funding lined up. So it's a going thing.
Do you happen to remember the name of that movie that he's making? I think it's called something like Confessions of a 911 witness or what 911 conspirator, right, or something like that.
That's no longer the lead or the working title. The working title right now is 9/11, a betrayal of trust.
Oh.
And then it's got a subtitle having something to do with the truth is coming, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. I think he was hoping to actually get the shooting done in a few months if he can keep going. Who else? Was Anna was next to speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Senator Gravel's ballot initiative is, I believe, key to bypassing the federal government. The fact that they're ignoring 9/11. I think that ballot initiative, there's so much to that. We can use that for so many things. So I'm saddened that not more acceptance was given to that. I think it's going to come up again. I think the ballot initiative is going to be kind of central towards getting citizens involved in showing their voice and showing their will and showing their, vote, because it's not happening through our established political system. So that's, I also have been thinking about Sheila. Sheila, are you still on the call? How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for asking.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm glad to hear you hadn't passed out or something.
Yeah.
So I hope you're doing okay. Okay. That's all I had to say.
Thank you, Anna. Who else would like to speak? Anybody on this question, or were you ready for open discussion? Okay. Well, let's open it up then. Who would like to speak on any related topic to the 9/11 Truth Movement?
Robin,
Robin, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious, probably a ridiculous broad brush question, but what people think about maybe, and I'm putting it in 10 years. Like, what's the deal, the tactic in the 10 years? What are people's thoughts about the? I am psyched for a bunch of reasons, but I want to know some other people. But I operate sort of.
Can you repeat the question? What tactic should we be using?
What people thoughts about the next 10 years of the 9/11 Truth Movement? Up, down, left, right. Most effective, least effective, what can we expect?
Okay.
What are people's feelings about it? I don't know. It's open.
Okay.
I've got some ideas on that. This is Anna.
Go ahead, Anna.
Well, one thing I think that if you're looking at, like the national trends of thought, I'm feeling like the America, how do I put it? Like Senator Gravel was spoke with too much liberal rhetoric, and it alienated so many conservatives, and I had a hard time accepting that the Constitution should be done away with, and it's a reason for slavery, and blaming the Constitution for slavery. So I'm just like throwing some ideas out for the next 10 years. I think we need to realize that there's 200 years of, you know, I love America, and I don't know. I guess I'm just saying, you know, to go back to some traditional, not only some traditional values, but also some traditional wording is going to be helpful, coming, you know, from Anna, from the, you know, Tea Party, from 9/11 Truth. I believe that the values, the Protestant values, Protestant with a small p, as in terms of political, not religious values, but being able to protest, and the values of owning your own property and owning your own businesses and not borrowing. It used to be in America 200 years ago that you don't borrow. You own everything. You pay what you can. You use your money for what you don't get into debt. That used to be all kind of American values kind of thing. And I believe that these values are kind of coming back into vogue, and thanks to Ron Paul and sound money, and not have this airy-fairy monetary system that's based upon nothing. I think 9/11, for those who are going to stand out and be leaders, have got to, I think will be more successful in reaching the overall population by more respectful, not necessarily toting the line, but more respectful of kind of Protestant little p values regarding money, regarding love your God, love your neighbor, traditional kind of thoughts that used to be part of the American rhetoric. I like Bob Bowman as a possible political leader figure. He's from the military. He's from the military intelligence. I think the 9/11 leaders may do better being from more of a that kind of perspective. So that's just my perspective, not really well articulated.
Yeah, this is Ken. I'd like to be on the stack if nobody else has anything to say at the moment. I'd like to respond to both what Anna had said earlier and to what somebody else said before about disagreeing with the approach of the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign, because I think it's very relevant to the question Robin is asking. What I really hope for the next 10 years is that the movement has come to the same conclusion that is a premise for the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign. Whether they agree with our campaign or not is not what I'm saying, but the premise is that the appeal to representative government to solve the issue of 9/11 is a dead end, okay? That is the major premise that I hope after 10 years of dead end, everybody comes to accept. Now, the Citizens 9/11 Commission in general, and Senator Gravel in particular with his national initiative, which is a different campaign, believes that the only way around this is through giving people back their own legislative power. In other words, not having to go through representatives to get legislation passed, to get policy decisions made, to be able to do it directly. And I happen to be of that school. I think that may, but I will say along with Anna that I think in order to get that accomplished, we may find ourselves having to ally ourselves with others who have a similar need for that kind of returning of the power to the people. And I also believe, personally, I really and truly do, not just because I'm the general manager of this campaign and because I know Senator Gravel better now, but because I read his book, which I encourage others to read, that his central premise is correct, the one that Anna just said that she sort of disagreed with, but that is that the Constitution denies us this direct legislative power, which was universal in the United States at one time, shortly after the Revolution, where people were self-governing on all levels until the Constitution came along and focused it at the representative government. And the reason for that was, I agree with them, it was to protect the institution of slavery, to make sure that people couldn't democratically undo this part of the Constitution. Now, you can agree or disagree with that, but I think the practical result of our efforts to get our existing government to do something about 9/11 is empirical proof enough that we can't continue to go down that road. We have to find a way of directly empowering some way of getting 9/11 dealt with. Okay, and I hope that the movement as a whole comes to the same conclusion. Whether or not it's through the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign is a different question, but that we need to go in some kind of direction like that, I hope, is the way forward for all of us.
I just comment on that. Ken, I actually agree with you that and the Constitution created the federal government, whereas before we had state governments, and returning
right.
to state sovereign is the way. Is the way. Now, if you're doing away with the Constitution, you know, gets us closer to state sovereignty, where we're all actually, 50 republics that are unified on certain subject on certain principles. But I'm believing that the fabric of American government would have unraveled long ago if we had done away with the Constitution, and we wouldn't even recognize the government that we have. So. Although I, you got to be suspicious about why the Constitution was drafted in secret, and what did it actually do? But as far as an example or a running, what would a federal government look like in a free republic and a free society under our ideal? I think the Constitution is probably closest to anything. But to take it away or to alter it at this point, when there's like so many ideologies and so many things ready to engulf us, is very dangerous talk. So
is that Anna speaking?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, I'd like to respond to that, but if anybody else would like to go first, go ahead.
This is okay. James, and I'd like to say, first of all, that I agree with what Anna just said. I don't agree with a lot of things that she says, but I do agree with what she just said, and I agree also with the general thrust of Senator Gravel's trying to open up at least a new line of attack, if you will, here, that's a good thing. We need the only thing that's not worth trying is nothing, in my opinion. But on the question of whether we totally give up on representative democracy as a tool for us, I'd say no. Representative democracy responds to public pressure, and there just simply isn't the public pressure at this point to further our goal of demanding a new investigation by representative democracy. But if we do our job as an information group, and if we inform enough citizens and gather enough support and can actually change the conventional wisdom regarding 9/11, just as I think the JFK conspiracy people gradually changed the conventional wisdom in the country involving that crime, then I think we can really get somewhere and apply the pressure needed to activate representative democracy in our favor. That's what I've been saying all along.
I'd like to be added to the stack. This is Anna Yeisley.
Okay, Anna, let me go, please, to respond to what you said earlier, and then you can go after me. And I'd also like to respond to what James said. First of all, nobody's suggesting doing away with the Constitution. The Citizens Initiative, which is the other thing that Senator Gravel proposes, doesn't propose to do away with anything. It proposes to, in effect, amend the Constitution directly. In other words, not using its existing mechanisms, but using a popular vote outside of the existing government to amend the Constitution, which we should really, I mean, in my opinion, we should have been able to do that all along. I don't know why that power was taken. Well, I do know why the power was taken away from us. It was to protect slavery. But the point is that everything would remain like it is. We'd still have representative government, but in addition to that, we would have popular referendum that would be possible now for people to directly legislate policy. which the government would then have to reflect. Okay, they wouldn't have to go through their representatives to get policies enacted. That could be done on a direct basis. That's the whole point of the Citizens Initiative. I'm not talking about the 9/11 CC campaign here. This is a different initiative that he's proposing. So in response to what James was saying, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Who else would like to speak?
Anna Yisley.
Anna, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Robin on the stack, too.
And then Robin after Anna.
Well, I want to suggest, too, that what we have in place is nothing like the representative government put in place by the Constitution, that what we have right now is we don't have any citizen representations. We've elected officials that have either been bribed, threatened, or bought by the corporations, banks, and the international financial, military, industrial complex. So what we see today has nothing to do with the Constitution. The Constitution couldn't even touch what's happening to our government. Our government, they don't even reflect anything. How I like to think of it, this is a different government, what we've got. We've got a statist, collectivist government that's ruled by the powers, those with all the money and those with all the power, the economic power. So we don't have representative government. We have a government that's serving the banks and corporations that have no connection with the citizens. And if they do have connections, it's severed through the media and through threat of public, throwing stories out. So I just want to just throw a line that you can't blame the Constitution for what we've got right now. What we've got right now is a government that was crafted after 1913 when the Federal Reserve System was set up. That was a new government that was set up there. It was different than the constitutional government. They ceased to have any allegiance, really, with the Constitution except in just a superficial form. So that's what I think that Gravel's message is just missing, because what we have today is not what the Constitution would have set up. They have completely perverted the principles that the Constitution were based on, which is that the purpose of government is to serve the people. The purpose of government is to protect the life, liberty, and property of its citizens. That is the proper role of government, and I believe that was the government that the Constitution was attempting to secure, but we don't have a government that protects the life, liberty, and property of Americans, and that's the crucial issue that we all have to see, I believe.
Okay, Robin, and then
Senator Gravel is not seeing that. He's blaming the Constitution and at the same time our early American principles of the proper role of government. He's blaming what is happening today on that, and I feel like it's the Federal Reserve System and the laws that got passed after the Federal Reserve was put into place that changed our government to the point where it doesn't recognize except only in exterior form the government that was meant for a free society. So that's my bit.
All right, Robin, and then myself.
Yeah, the point that I would like to make in the situation is I really don't like to get in the weeds here, You don't know me until like 2005, 2006 when I came out publicly, but I knew, and I apologize if I'm repeating, but I knew in the afternoon of 9/11 that it was an inside job, but I also knew that I couldn't speak out about it. And then when Griffin did, and because of Barrett in 2005, I said, okay, it's time to get going. The bottom line of the story is this, and it is something that everybody should feel good about. The Occupy movement, the 99% movement, is saying basically one thing. They're tired of the lies. They're tired of the manipulation. Okay. They weren't around when some of the amazing human beings associated with the 9/11 truth-seeking community were in outrage starting in 2001, saying, we want the truth. We're being lied to. We want the truth. We're being lied to. So what is going on right now, whether you want to agree or disagree, or whether it is so close to your face that you can't see it, is that these kids and other people who are in the street are saying, hey, we want the truth too. And whether some of them can go with us about 9/11, I don't think is that particularly irrelevant, because years ago, the flat fact is there was only a very small group of human beings, some of which who are on this conference call, who had the courage and determination to say, no, I'm tired of being lied to. They have caught up to us. They're using some of the techniques that we use, not all of them. Some of them can't acknowledge it directly because the programs have been infiltrated. But when, in repeating what Ken said earlier, there was this huge spike in support of 9/11 truth, it's telling you the message. The majority of the Occupy movements are infiltrated right now to destroy themselves in the fashion that many of the progressive movements, especially the peace movements in the 60s, 70s, were infiltrated to destroy themselves. It's not relevant. The message here is that because we have demanded the truth when other people were running from their government and obeying George Bush and Dick Cheney when they said, if you're not with us, you're with the terrorists, okay? That's who they were. And now they're out in the streets because they've had enough. We had enough 10 years ago. They had enough 6 months ago. Please don't forget that. I am a 60s and 70s activist. I'm telling you straight out. People are seeking the truth because there's a whole bunch of amazing people who have just sought the 9/11 truth. We have
Amen.
Given them cover.
Amen.
I say amen, too.
Great. Okay. I'm sorry?
That's all. Good job.
Oh, okay. This is Ken. What I wanted to say earlier to James, he's arguing that we should put the pressure on our representative government and that will bring about the change that we need, or that's a fair avenue to approach. I think back to the amount of pressure that was put on our government right before the invasion of Iraq, okay? That was a tremendous amount of pressure. That was huge, okay? It didn't do a doggone thing, okay? This representative government is not responsive to public pressure. It has shown this over and over again. Plus, it has a complicit media that continues to distort the reality of the public's opinion. That's why I am personally convinced that the only correction for this, and while I disagree with Anna about the roots of the current situation, I certainly agree with her characterization of it about the level of corporatocracy that's actually running the country. But what's the solution? Okay? The solution cannot be to continue along the same road, because that's what got us here in the first place. That's the same process that's going to continue to maintain the status quo. The only solution has to be a radical change in the way we make decisions, and that must be to return power, decision-making power, directly to the people. I'm sorry, I can't see a different way to go forward with that. Who else
would
like
to speak? And my answer to that is that we should follow both paths. Both paths.
If I could, just put me on the stack, or whenever I could just make another comment.
Well, all right, Anna, you can go. James, if you have something to say, you can go after Anna. Okay, go ahead, Anna.
Well, there's another aspect of our political and governmental system that we haven't talked about, and that's the judicial system, that the criminal justice system did not investigate 9/11. It did not force an investigation 9/11. So
mm-hmm.
what you're proposing, Ken, and okay, what we need to do is do your idea. That means we need to get the citizen vote and somehow affect the criminal justice system. I think without that, can we really do this without the justice system actually imparting justice or trying to, or are you possibly saying, can we discard that? I'm just open. I know that that's a big, huge without prosecution, people get away with any. I mean, people will do anything. You know, there's that experiment where these subjects had the opportunity to torture through electrical shock the guy on the other side. They were told that there was no way they could get into trouble. So even well-adjusted, balanced, good people, because they knew they wouldn't get into trouble, that they were perfectly safe from any kind of prosecution, did went beyond their own, what they would have ever done in real life, you know, without a judicial system, without prosecution. We are, you know, I'm not sure how to get a, you know, how do we get a cold, you know, how do we get, well, how do we get any kind of, without getting control of the judicial, and how do you do that?
Okay, I'll respond to that as soon as, James, did you have anything else to say?
Yes, I'd like to point out that in my observation anyway, as a historian, that the earlier analog to the 9/11 truth movement was the abolitionist movement beginning early in the 19th century and in a larger way in the early 1830s. And those people persevered for decades, and they most people around them and many people in that movement were despairing the government ever doing anything. Even during the Civil War, the tide of public opinion was that President Lincoln was not going to abolish slavery. He just wasn't going to do it. He was going to come to some reconciliation with the South or something, and they could keep the slavery. When public pressure when the political climate got to such a place where he could abolish slavery, he did so. He actually did so. And what I'm saying is that I agree with Anna very much that we definitely can't afford to try to bypass the judiciary and the role of justice and due process, which is in my opinion the biggest crime of 9/11 is stealing due process from this country. And until that is restored and followed and applied in the case of 9/11 and some other notable cases where it's been avoided, we won't have our country back. So I'd say we've got to do both. We've got to follow Senator Gravel's prescription, and we've got to continue doing what we've been doing insofar as trying to influence representative democracy through informing the public.
Okay, thank you, James. Somebody's got some background noise there, so please star 6 if you've got background conversation going on in your domicile there. Okay, let me respond. I think we're all in agreement on this point, and I want to clarify that the Citizens 9/11 Commission does not attempt to replace the judicial system. It recognizes the need for the judicial system to act. But the whole problem of the lack of due process here, which is what we're all in agreement on, how do we address that problem? The Citizens 9/11 Commission attempts to at least do the investigation part, which is not being done right now, in a public way so that it will inspire public pressure on the judicial system to act on the basis of what the investigation reveals. That's the thinking. It's not to replace the judicial system. It's to prompt it. It's to push it. It's to galvanize public pressure to make it work. But because there's no stimulus right now within that whole judicial framework, something has to get that process started from without. That's the thinking, okay? So who else would like to speak?
I'd like to be on the stack. This is Anna.
Yeah, go ahead, Anna. You can go.
The Constitution does allow the impeachment. Impeachment's not just for presidents. It's for all elected officials, including judges. Now, until I think what needs to be done is a focus on the criminal justice system by the citizens. You know, this is just a new idea. I'm just throwing this out here. Why couldn't we do impeachment, start, you know, taking on the judicial system is difficult because we've spent like 60 years. We've allowed our judicial system to come way beyond our American law is here, is on one level. And the commercial maritime, the UCC code, and the establishing the Federal Reserve established a whole different legal system. We have laws on the book that protect our life, liberty, and property, but the judicial system doesn't go beyond, doesn't go below, say 1913 or maybe 1871 when the act of there was something there that kind of established the government that's today, about 1871, the Act of 1871. I don't remember exactly the details of this. But anyway, at a certain point, our judicial system stopped looking at common law, stopped looking at American common law. There are laws on the books, and there's more laws protecting us and protecting, you know, justice and truth, and there is not. But the present-day judicial system isn't looking at the American common law. They're looking at maritime law, commercial law, the law that was established upon the Federal Reserve System, monetary system when it was established. So I just want to throw that out there that, it, you know, you don't really think of it, but the judicial and the monetary system are very much connected because laws changed when our monetary system passed into the hands of a private banking cartel and out of the hands of Congress. So just want to throw that in there that this is, you know, that's why the Federal Reserve is so connected to establishing freedom, justice, truth, whatever, back in this country because of the laws that they started obeying at that point. So.
Okay. Robin, go ahead.
So when I wrote Manny Badillo and talked to him about a couple of things, what I basically said is that the majority of the people in the Occupy Wall Street movement, or the 99% movement, are actually the same as us, okay, with all of the same complaints, okay. The only thing they're missing is about 200 hours of good study in the 9/11 truth movement. There's a big thing here. I'm sorry to repeat. The guys who are in the street right now are in the street because we've been in the street. All of their complaints are our complaints. We just happen to have the most vivid and the most difficult emotional thing to deal with. Obviously, everybody in the 9/11 truth community has recognized that democracy is a fake, that the judicial system is doing exactly as those who appointed them wanted it to do, that the financial system is doing exactly what the oligarchs wanted them to do, and that their big police force, which is the CIA, Pentagon, go to wars, do whatever it is that they want to do specifically to defend them. They get all of this. And they also get 9/11 truth, but they just, it's only part of the weave. There's a huge revolution going on, and it's wonderful. I've seen it for a long time in the streets that I walk. Okay, and they're not ready to state what I'm stating, and that is that they are in the streets because they are modeling themselves after what we have done. So we are all complaining about all kinds of little things right here. The bottom line of the story is the revolution is on, 9/11 truth is part of it, but it is not the end of it. It just happens to be the most vivid thing that is in Technicolor.
Right, true. I just like to interject that I'm getting a little bit of a from a 9/11 truth. There's a big discussion regarding taking a lawsuit against NIST for its negligence. NIST accepted $29 million to explain to the American government what caused 9/11. That's why they were established and they were paid to do it. And the fact that they have so neglected just a standard protocol fire investigation, for instance, should be a pretty strong case. And so it's tying back to the importance of the judicial, what do they call it when there are a whole bunch of people get involved in a lawsuit against
class action?
I was thinking just of a, exactly. A class action suit. against NIST. Now, it would provide not only publicity, but also get a chance to get this information out. It would also be a in-your-face attack on the, you know, at least some kind of, you know, battle with the criminal justice system and their neglect in establishing justice regarding 9/11 and investigating it thoroughly, how they should have done. So I think it's an exciting idea and prospect, and maybe this may be something too to kind of join all our efforts towards a class action suit against NIST. What does everyone think about that?
This is Dwayne.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
I will relate maybe a similar lawsuit that is underway right now. It's not anything to do with 9/11. It has to do with, well, it's a couple here in La Jolla that have filed a suit, class action suit against AIG for providing false information that they knew was false to the government. And so they're basically suing them on behalf of the American public, where they would have to pay back $40 billion to the American public. And it's kind of going quite well, but this couple has actually been in meeting with Eric Holder, where he was struggling with the fact that if they are supportive of this suit, they're basically suing themselves. And when he says themselves, he was referring not to themselves as the government, but themselves as the power, the bankers, the people that basically are important to him. And he's struggling with that informally on whether to be helpful or not. So it's quite interesting the way it's going, but possibly the same type of suit could be done here, where you're maybe filing suit against the subcontractors that maybe provided information to NIST that they knew was incorrect, having to do with that investigation. Over.
Yeah, if we could get the ballot initiative in combination with some lawsuit, get people, populace, not only agreeing to take certain governmental agencies to court, or to just, you know, this situation with AAG, or yeah, I believe that until we infiltrate, you know, this criminal justice system, we're still going to be at the mercy of a law enforcement agency that's actually created against the American freedom, against American citizens, and for the government, it's the corporatocracy. Our criminal justice system is working for the corporatocracy. And how to thwart that, how to get through it, the class action lawsuit just seemed like the good idea. And then the ballot initiative, too, you need you know, enough citizens to say, yeah, we want to do this. And so.
Go ahead.
Anna, the citizens are out there. That's the point. The point is the revolution is going on. And there are other people who are out there in the 99% movement, Occupy, whatever you want to call it, who have expertise in what's wrong equal to our expertise at what went wrong on 9/11. We're not alone. They're not alone. There's a wonderful revolution going on right now. And it's going
global.
To surface in a
it
whole bunch
global,
of different places.
Too. That's
so,
really
Hold it, Anna. Let's let him finish. Are you finished?
I did. That's it. There's a revolution going on. We're part of it.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to speak. Anna, would you like to speak also?
I was just going to say that the revolution is global. It's not, you know, we actually at this
Agreed.
Point, you know, everyone's talking about, you know, against the one world government. Yeah, hey, if that one world government is for the protection of the life, liberty, and property of all global inhabitants, you know, I can be all for a global government if that's the case. Unfortunately, the global government that's attempting to be set up is not anything towards protecting the rights, life, liberty, property of human beings. It's set up to protect the life, liberty of you know, corporations, banks, and the money elite. So I think I
But Anna, millions and millions and millions of people completely agree with you.
Right, and we are the government.
If I could, I'd like to ask the question of those who support this idea of a class action lawsuit. What would be the result of it if it were successful? And how long do you think it would take for it to succeed? Those are the two questions I have. They're related, but assuming that, first of all, how long would it take to make that thing work? And secondly, if it were successful, what would the result of that be in practical terms? Okay.
Anna too.
Okay, so whoever said first they wanted to be on the stack, was that Robin?
Okay, number one, it already is successful.
You already on the stack?
Yes, it already is successful. The idea that some group that feels that justice has not been applied is standing up against the government is a winner. We're part of the tapestry. We're part of this revolution. Now, whether it punishes NIST or whether any of that stuff happens for immediate structural change through the judicial system, I doubt that. But what it's changing is it's just empowering people more and more and more. We're not going to get our justice through justice. We're not going to get justice through the justice system. The only way we're going to get justice is through changing the system and throwing people out and just really, really changing it. And this is worldwide. And I just don't think that 10,000 families in the world that are running the whole show, I'm pretty sure they're making their walls a little bit higher right now.
Okay,
well,
Anna?
Now what would be the result of a lawsuit? The result of a lawsuit is that we would lose the first one more than likely. But what would happen there is, just like what's happening in Spotsylvania County here, we have a situation where the Commonwealth Attorney and the judges are in cahoots, and the Sheriff's Department are in cahoots, and they've been lying, and they've been doing false arrests. They're not obeying the law. They're making up their own laws. Okay, so we've been fairly successful in taking, creating motions and doing that. But what it comes down to is the judges. Now, in Spotsylvania, for instance, all the 16th District that are involved in this case have recused themselves, or the Virginia Supreme Court can recuse them from this situation that we're involved in, and that's what would happen. What would happen with a class action lawsuit against NIST, for instance? Okay, you would be able to pinpoint the judges, because it's such a clear-cut case. There's no way any jury peer hearing the 9/11 evidence that AE 911 could present, and all the other myriad of other outside AE 911 truth. There's no judge who could truthfully rule that NIST was not incompetent. There's just no way, unless he's got nothing to lose. So what I'm saying is that a lawsuit would pinpoint the judges. We need to impeach the judges. That's the bottom line. Until we start impeaching the judges who make the final call, and if you have a suit that is so clear cut and so obvious, and that's kind of what's happening. It's like in a little bit of an example here in Spotsylvania. It is so clear cut that the judges that they finally let hear the case outside this district, outside the jurisdiction, because no one else wants to rule on it. They pick it out. A retired judge that doesn't have anything to lose, but he is pinpointed. I mean, this guy is a bad guy, and he's going to be easy to remove. So I think on a national level, it could work the same way. We need to impeach the judges. They're the top end of the, top end of the criminal justice system. If these guys are blatantly working for someone other than the American people, I believe it actually is clear to see if everyone's looking at it. And a lawsuit would create a situation where we could really see what's happening and make it something that everyone can kind of see, and it's indisputable.
Well, Anna, I don't know if anybody else is on, but I, the bottom line of the story is that Occupy Wall Street isn't just Wall Street. It's Occupy Democracy, and it's occupying all of the assets or aspects of democracy. And that's what's happening right now. People are just reclaiming the whole deal. That's all I got to say.
Well, you know, coming from my... I'll wait till you finish. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so what I'm saying to you is it's not going to be immediate. It's not going to be 9/11 centric, okay? It's going to be just people uprising against their rulers. And we started it, and we have the best evidence against it because it's the most violent, okay, that is depictable right now. But it doesn't mean that everybody has to buy into what we're saying because they have their own grievances that are completely, justified. So there's a tremendous revolution going on. We have a hand in it. That's all I got to say.
And that's all good.
We should just keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I tend to agree. But I can see some value in the class action lawsuit, only to bring attention.
I agree. I totally agree.
Because we need to bring attention.
But Anna, it's not the only lawsuit that's going up right now to recover our democracy.
Right. Can I just say a little thing on democracy? And now, from my intellectual, circle, or not intellectual, but whatever learning I've come across, the majority of the people is not right. It's typically a 10% tireless minority to make all positive changes towards evolution. They're usually the protesters, they're the activists, they're the ones who are willing to stand up against the powers that be. The majority is rarely part of that thing, although they're influenced by it. So when you talk about democracy, there's a little bit more to majority rule, that we have to realize, that we have to establish a moral code, moral law.
I didn't define the term. So the term democracy, I would define in an opposite way of saying is standing up against oligarchy. How's that? I don't care how you do it. You just do it. And there's zillions of people who are out there.
Talk about majority, and that's where we get tripped up, because no matter how many people think that the law of gravity shouldn't be and we should be able to fly, there's certain laws that no matter what have to be maintained. And there's a moral law here that doesn't necessarily have to be articulated, but there's a moral law that has to be returned to, and I believe it's the proper role of government is to protect the life, liberty, and property of its citizens. That and also the other moral laws that would the rights that we have are not given to us by government.
That's your libertarian point of view, and I respect that, and I appreciate it. That's part of the mix. Other people have other points of view, but almost everybody agrees that fundamentally, everybody in the street right now with Occupy or whomever agrees that whatever is going on is wrong. That's
I thought that the formula was life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You've cited the French formula, which we changed, I think, in this country.
Well, the way I look at it, I know that that's an argument out there, but the way I argue it is if you can't own that you've dreamed, envisioned, and worked for, if you can't own that thing, if government can come and take it from you, they have robbed you of your ability to pursue happiness, because the fruit of our labors is very much a part of the fruit of our labors, which is typically property, is part of the pursuit of happiness. So I understand that this was a discussion with Thomas Jefferson, because he did, in the early drafts of the Declaration of Independence, mentioned property, but opted for the pursuit of happiness because he felt the ownership of property was so closely tied to the pursuit of happiness. If you can't own the fruit of your labor, this is an important thing, because this is what establishes the boundary between government and citizen, is that the citizen has a God-endowed right to the fruit of his labor. So I'm just going to, I do say property instead of pursuit of happiness, but in the end, if you cannot own what you touch and have created it through your own endeavor and through your own imagination, if you can't own that, if somebody else owns that, they're going to rob you of your ability to pursue future dreams.
This is kind of like to stick also. Okay, you also like to stick.
That property in this case is subsumed. It's subsumed by life and liberty. You can't have life and liberty without property, so it's subsumed. It's already covered.
Well, also, I like the pursuit of happiness. I prefer that phrase more than any other phrase.
This is Ken. I'd like to jump in here real quick. First of all, regarding protection of property, although this is getting a little bit off track here, but as a hardened socialist, I'd like to say that not only does it enable you to protect the fruit of your own labor, it enables you to protect the fruit of somebody else's labor if you happen to get a hold of it and call it your property. So that's a problem with that approach. But I would like to also say, no jumping in here. I get to say what I had to say. The second part is regarding democracy. Okay, democracy is not just about, it is majority rule, okay? But representative government doesn't, in our particular situation now, does not represent the opinion of the majority. That's very clear from the Occupy movement. I mean, those people are saying, hey, come on, man. You know, if you were doing what we wanted, would you think we'd be out in the streets here? No. Obviously, the majority's will is not being respected by the representative government. And no matter who gets elected, it's the same old story every time, no matter which party, no matter which people and so forth and so on, the will of the majority is not being represented by representative government. So therefore, democracy, let's go back to the original definition. It means direct rule by the people. And that means the people have to be empowered to have legislative authority. That's all I have to say. Who else would like to speak?
Could I just address that just for a moment? I agree with what you're saying, Ken. We're all pretty much in agreement. It's just a matter of, okay, now seizes, when a government seizes to represent the will of its of the citizens, of its people, or of their territory, when an elected official seizes to represent its the citizens or its constituents, then it seizes to be representative government. It's not representative government. It's a government that serves the corporations and banks and not the citizens. That's what we've got to
say.
So I'm a little worried about using representative government. We have to also, at the same time of pointing out the bad things, we have to actually establish a vision of what would a real self-governing, free republic, I like to call it, what would that look like? And representative government in a country with 300 million, I just can't see that you could throw that out. But we don't have representative government.
Okay, I'd like to respond to that. Who else would like to speak? Who else would like a chance to speak here? Robin, and then who else?
We have absolute representative government. And that is that the government is representing the corporations. And so the exact antithesis to that, which is the libertarian journey, which is, I think, you're on, okay, is that we would have 350 million individuals out there, and it would be an anarchistic survival of the fittest. So somewhere in between the two, there has to be a social agreement. And that's what the people in the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% is about. We're saying, no, we want a different social, economic, political agreement.
Mm-hmm. Which is representing government that represents... Hold
it, Anna. I'm next on the stack. Would you like to speak after me? Okay. Again...
I just spilled something.
I'll put you on the stack. Interrupt you, Henry. Again, I think the question is... Well, I think Robin has said it pretty well, okay? We need, in addition to this representative government, which is not working, an override that does represent the will of people. And yes, it is practical, okay? In this day and age, with electronic mechanisms, with electronic signatures, there's all kinds of ways that people could be directly involved in making policy decisions that the representative government would have to be accountable to. that could be done. It's totally feasible. We all know this. We've all talked about it in the past. How come we can't just vote on the computer and that would be it? And then that would almost, in a way, do away with the need for representative government, although we still have to have representative government to administer. But the point is that the people should be the senior partner in that arrangement. If the people are the senior partner and they can institute their own policies directly, representative government would then either carry that out or would be impeached based on the fact that they're not carrying out the express will of the people, which can be directly capped instead of having to go through the distorting filter of so-called representative government. Okay, who else would like to? Anna, you're next. And then after Anna,
no,
whoever else.
I agree. I'm just, I agree with that. The only thing I don't agree with is to say that the government that's in America right now, it resembles anything even close. It is so vilely in opposition to any kind of government or a free society. So I just want to, you know, make that distinction. What we've got now is a...
Anna, nobody has ever claimed anything different than what you just said. I don't understand why you're repeating this.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has disagreed with you on that.
Only because
nobody.
Of my, my allegiance,
not
I guess.
Not for one sentence. I haven't heard one word from one person who has stated, okay...
Let's let Anna finish her statement, and then I'll put you on the deck, okay? I'll just finish this, that
I'm, you know, I have a lot of friends who see themselves as anarchists, and I'm seeing that, okay, so say we're going to be successful in establishing a free society, which we don't have right now. I wanted to add a point about that slavery. You know, we never did get out of slavery. If you don't own your own property, if you don't have control over your daily actions, then you're not slavery.
Broken record, Anna. We've heard it. Broken record. We've heard it.
All right. I guess that's a call for somebody else to speak. Who else would like to speak? Okay. Well, I think maybe we're done with this discussion. It's kind of gotten away from 9/11. So maybe we ought to call it quits for tonight.
Well, good. I think this is very interesting, and we can't just be focused on 9/11 just because globally we're trying to establish a new set of, you know, ground rules kind of thing. And then I think that they're old. I think they've been established. I really think that 200 years ago there were some, you know, founding fathers here that, you know, had a vision of a free society and a government that would work. And even if you throw away the Constitution, don't throw away the Declaration of Independence. So I think that they're forging a vision of a government that would work is important. So to think that, So and I know we're more in agreement than not, but
yeah.
It's just a matter of
okay.
blood.
So I'd like to go ahead and thank everyone for their cooperation tonight and for a very interesting call. And see you all in a month. That would be the last Wednesday of December. Ciao.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank
Love
you.
Love to all you. Bye.
Bye-bye.